Asanas that we practice during the asana classes, hatha yoga classes, are, as I said the other day, not all mentioned in the two basic texts that we follow, the Hatha Yoga Pradipika and Gairanda Samhita. They have got a few, the others are not mentioned at all. And in some asanas are called by some other names. I'm bringing this to your attention because you know people usually get worked up and worried. What is this? This is something. This is not mentioned here. This is not stated there. Even amongst these scriptures, there are differences. For instance, viparita karani. Is usually taken to mean the half shoulder stand, you know. You raise yourself up and hold your bottom. That's known as the viparita karani. But in some texts, the headstand, shirasasana, is known as viparita karani. Yeah. You wonder why, till you realize that this word viparita karani has got a meaning. It's just an ordinary Sanskrit word. It has got its own meaning. Karani is a doer, to do. Viparita is upside down. A posture that turns you upside down. As I said the other day, they believe that there is a lunar sphere in the head. They even pinpointed it's just about the palate, and that there is a solar plexus in the abdomen. It's not as far-fetched as it appears at first sight. The mentally deranged person is called a lunatic. One whose brain is out of order is called a lunatic. So obviously some others also associated the brain and the brain centers with the lunar force. And the abdominal heat is referred to by everybody as solar plexus, the solar force. And the yogis observation it was, not merely a contention or concept or belief, but observation it was, that the more we stay in the upright position, with the head up and abdomen below, the more tired and depleted we become. That's it. 2 or 3 hours of upright position makes you yawn. And they figured out that it is because the head is on top, the abdomen is below. And they probably invented a nice, lovely, romantic theory. Sort of like scientific fiction, it is called yogic fiction. Why not? What's wrong with that? They said that the gastric fire is burning all the time, and the fire always burns up. And there is something, a lunar, life-giving lunar force, they called it nectar, amritam. It was pouring down from up, and it falls into this fire and is consumed by the fire. So if you turn it upside down, the nectar that flows from the lunar falls on, they very cleverly fixed it on the top of the palate. If you turn it upside down, what happens? It pours into your brain, which is nice. And the gastric fire, the fire can only burn with an upward movement, does not extend towards the throat and the brain, it extends towards the legs. So it's all right. And that posture was called Viparita Karani. Any posture, therefore, which places the solar plexus above the throat is Viparita Karani. And so they called even the headstand Viparita Karani. It's good to understand the common sense point of view rather than get worked up about the technicalities and this says so and that says so. It says all sorts of things. Of the postures mentioned, very few are found in the Gairanda Samhita and the Hatha Yoga Pradipika. They mentioned some others. There is a specific mention in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika that Shiva taught 84 yoga postures. I may sound a bit unorthodox. When it says Shiva, please don't get worked up and say, oh my God, it is this Lord Shiva sitting in Kailasa, you know, one of the members of the Trinity. It may be Shivananda. A person known as Shiva, what's wrong with that? Why must I get worked up about all that and say, oh my God, this was taught by Shiva to Parvati? And maybe there was a person called Shiva. He was a great yogi. And maybe he taught it to his wife called Mrs. Shiva or Parvati. It's better to demythologize and de-idolize all these things and get to know them better. Get to know them as personalities and as the expressions of personal feelings and opinions and experiences, instead of getting all hot under the collar. And of these, four are considered important. And what are those four? Those four are meditation postures, postures used for meditation. Yoga asanas were primarily meant as meditation postures. The other aspect of it seems to have come later. The other, twisting and turning and so on, seems to have evolved much later. At some time or other, they must have discovered that what you and I call disease or illness, sickness, is caused by the non-flow of prana along certain nadis. We'll come to these nadis day after tomorrow probably. It's not all that clear. But for the present, till today and tomorrow, let us identify these nadis with the nerves, just for today and tomorrow. The yogis must have observed one extremely simple phenomenon, which is common, which you and I have observed also, though we have never questioned it, we have never gone into it. That a limb becomes inert when it is paralyzed. That is, some energy which was flowing through the nerves along that limb has been cut off somewhere. It's possible that they also perform some kind of surgical operation and suddenly cut some nerves and found that the part that it supplied became dead. That makes sense, yes? Simple, terribly simple. And having observed this, they perhaps drew a general principle out of it, evolved a general principle out of it, and concluded that all illness, all malfunctioning of the physical organism can be directly traced to the cutting off of the flow of prana. Simple? Yeah. And therefore they evolved yoga postures that would restore this flow. And you see how funny we are. And therefore they said that do not wear any tight clothes and so on, and be relaxed and do not make your body tense, because if you do that, the flow of prana will be arrested. And they started a new yoga called naked yoga. There is something healthy in somewhere, and then suddenly it goes. But the principle is this, that there should be no tension in the body, and but at the same time there should be no inertia in any part of the body. These two principles must be put together. We saw the other day that if you are standing in the Trikonasana, the triangle posture, there is tension in one limb and the other limb is completely forgotten. So tension in one part of the body necessarily means that you are going to forget another vital part of the body. Battling with this tension is no good. You will make it more tense. So if you turn your attention to that part of the body which has been forgotten, this tension is immediately relieved. By this twofold action of the yoga postures, the proper flow of prana is restored. Then, this is a later development, but the primary use of the yoga postures was to be able to sit in that posture for quite a considerable time, firmly and without discomfort. Let it put it the other way. Though, for once, the sutras have a positive definition, sthira sukham asanam. That is, the posture should be firm and comfortable. Let us put it the other way, because lying down in bed, it is more comfortable. The best posture. But then you fall asleep. The posture should be firm and not uncomfortable. Double negative. And in that posture you can sit for a considerable time, forgetful of the body, oblivious of the body, so that the body does not demand attention. So that, again, the attention can be directed elsewhere, to something more vital. And of those postures, of the 84 postures, the 84 are not mentioned here. And I have a hunch that even the headstand might have been mentioned there. Why not meditate on in your headstand? What's wrong with that? You know what's called the Vrikshasana? Huh? No? Get up. Get up, I'll show you. Simple. Yeah, stand straight. Take your one foot up and put it on your thigh. That's it. Hands up. This is called Vrikshasana. Tadasana, Vrikshasana. All the names mean just one thing, the posture of a tree, the tree posture. It stands like a tree. I don't know if he looks like a tree. Good, thank you. And it is said that in some kind of prehistoric ancient times, someone used to stay on that posture for about 10,000 years. I have a feeling that again, that their year meant something else. That's all, maybe minutes or seconds. Or anyhow. And therefore, it should be possible to enter into a state of contemplation in any one of those postures. It's possible to contemplate, enter into a state of meditation in the headstand, in the shoulder stand, in all these postures. And I have at least seen one wonderful man. He was a yogi and also a great devotee, who said that if you remained in Paschimottanasana, the forward bending, for 3 hours continuously, you will enter into samadhi. So I am only suggesting, not dogmatic here, I am only suggesting that there are infinite possibilities. It's possible that all those postures were meant for contemplation, meditation. And it is possible that they were only meant as aids to better health, so that one is able to sit for a long period in the meditation posture and enter into meditation. All these are possible. And of the four main meditation postures, two are quite popular. Yes? One of you? Huh? Come here. No, first to the Padmasana. The Padmasana is, of course, the most popular. And let's also try to get hold of some. Right. And I'll give you different points of view or different teachings so that you may be a bit confused. Now, there are some who say that both the knees must be on the floor. That's terribly important. And there are some who say that's not important at all, but the heels must touch the groins on both sides. Bring the legs right over. Here, like this. As far away. No, no. Here. Into the groins. That's one view, this is another view. If you push the knees, push the heels into the groins, one of your knees is up. They say it doesn't matter. Put a cushion underneath. Good. And the other posture that is considered wonderful or super wonderful, and some of them say that it is the supreme posture. You're here. I'll give you a quotation if you want, where the text says that if you are able to sit in Siddhasana, what more do you want? That's final. Siddhasana is you stick one heel on the perineum and put the other heel on top of that. On top of that, and push the toes into the between the thigh and the calf muscles. The other one also, this one also, pull it up.
Yeah.
Pull the toes up.
And the other foot as well.
The other foot as well, yes. Yeah. But your left heel is supposed to be pressing on your pubic region, which means the body comes forward. You don't have to. Funny people. You don't have to look at. Can't you? Can't you look? When someone says right heel, he says, "Ah, this is right heel."
I forget.
That's another thing which is. We'll try, see what happens.
But then I can't get this
food. Right, therefore, you're sitting on the floor. And yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. If you refer back to the texts, these small little details are not mentioned. And some people get worried about it and, oh, what happens, why doesn't it mention? They have mentioned the most vital aspect of the posture. This must be there. How you get there and what else happens is up to you. It's all right for her to ask, must the bottom be on the floor or up? But there may be persons with different anatomical structure. And what is good for him may not work for her. She's too thin. Right? And when you sit in that posture, there are innumerable questions of what to do with the hands. Leave them away somewhere else. Because it doesn't mention anything. The text does not mention anything. Do what you like with your hands. Put them on your knees, put them on your lap. Hold them like this, the chin mudra. That's all right. Anything is all right. And probably you are doing the pranayama, probably you are doing japa with your malas. There are infinite possibilities.
You say it doesn't matter what you do with your hands, but yet there are certain mudras that are reputed to increase pranic flow.
Perfectly, sir. Yeah. Perfectly. So if you want to adopt them, please do.
That's your choice.
Yeah, correct. You see, for instance, jnani or whatever, he may prefer this, the chin mudra. And there may be a Zen student who may want to have this, the peace mudra. It's up to you. There are infinite possibilities.
It seems that the body is at a different angle, but if you keep your hands on your knees,
yeah, good. Why not?
Keeps the body at a very specific angle, which is different from this.
So one has to develop the sensitivity to find what suits one. And all that. There was another great, who is fairly slim. Probably you can do it. Come here. Sit on your left heel. Bring the right foot over the... Yeah, right. Good. And hold the knee like that. Beautiful. Lovely posture. This is highly recommended by... A great yogi called Gyaneshwara. He calls it Virasana. It's possible only for those people who have fairly thin thighs and legs. Thank you. Has someone got a longish scarf? What is that? Yeah, come here. Sit like this and tie yourself with it. Sit with your knees up. Knees up a little more. Yeah, right. Good. This is known as Sukhasana. And very good, especially for aged people. You can push this thing a little higher up, so that it serves like a hammock. It supports your back. And if, there, you know, you can sit like this for about half an hour and then suddenly it goes off. It's a very helpful, useful posture, not for Swaminatha Brahmananda, for another 50 years. Only for aged people. No, you don't do that anymore. You let your hands go, between your knees, and the body straight. No, the back must be straight. Right. Thank you. And once the practice of the other yogasanas has corrected the flow and re-established the proper flow of prana throughout the body, the meditation postures merely re-establish the smooth and even flow of prana throughout the body. And then we start pranayama. And before we start pranayama, though I mentioned that the flow of prana in the body, they do not seem to assert that even the personalized or individualized prana is confined to the body, to the physical body. This is a terribly important thing to remember. Prana is not something, prana is not breath, prana is not even the energy that flows in the nerves, in the veins and in the arteries or in the cells of this body. Prana includes the magnetic field that surrounds this body. If you want to be a little more confused, I've brought something else. A chapter from the Yoga Vasishta, which insists that prana, the one end of prana, one pole of this prana is 12 inches from the body, 12 finger breadths from the body. It's here. Vadashanta. So, if you describe a shell for yourself, which is 12 inches approximately from your body, that whole shell or shield is also permeated by this prana. What exists in the total sphere is called prana.
Would that be the same as somebody's aura? They say that the different people
are possibly
colors surrounding them.
Yeah. What is given here is Dvadashanta. Dvadashanta is 12 finger breadths from the body. 12 finger. Yeah. That is the sphere of prana. So that prana is not something which flows merely in the nostrils, Prana is not something which is merely confined to the cells of the physical body, but it is something which permeates the whole thing, including this shell. A magnetic field around me. The theosophists call it the etheric double, and all sorts of theories are there.
Yeah. But prana is found in the energy that flows in the nadis.
Yes.
Amongst other things.
I told you, nadis are not the nerves and so on, we'll discuss it day after tomorrow.
But prana is the energy that is.
Prana is the energy that fills every cell of your body, but it is not confined, it is not limited to the physical body, to the physical cells. It extends outside. That is, we are talking now of the individualized or personalized prana. It does not even mean that prana as such is limited to this physical body or even this 12 inches shell. Prana is cosmic. But there is an individualized prana associated with the me. Even that personalized prana is not limited to the physical body. If we understand this, then it is possible to practice pranayama a lot more freely, without getting all that worked up and, if I do.